Welcome to Te Rere Mako Nakayomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel Perek Dalet. At the end of the last perek, we were left to ponder a pretty basic and essential question. Up until now, we have seen God ask, basically beg Yechezkel to open his mouth to speak. And then, for reasons we're left to figure out, God asks him to do quite the opposite of speaking. In Abika, a valley, God tells him, don't talk, fin elamta. In fact, don't say a word, not until I tell you. Uvedabri otach eftach epicha. When I speak to you, then you'll open your mouth when I tell you to. Almost as if to ensure he doesn't speak, Yechezkel is told to lock himself in his house. Yisager betoch beitecha. And in case that's not enough to make sure that he stays put, he's told, Hine natnu alacha avotim v'asurucha bahem. You will be tied down with ropes as though you're imprisoned. We are seeing a 180-degree pivot from being asked to speak to being commanded not to. Well, it might seem that in commanding him not to speak, God is in effect asking him to abandon his mission. This is not the case at all. Instead, he is going to communicate, just in a different way. Let me ask you this. If someone tied a scarf around your mouth so you couldn't speak, would you still be able to communicate if you needed to? What would you do? If you couldn't rely on your power of speech, you'd look for other ways of getting your point across, right? You'd use actions instead of words to communicate. And in fact, that's exactly what happens in our next parak. God asks Yechezkel to execute a series of seemingly disconnected actions. Action is about to replace speech. Let's map out these actions. Yechezkel is first told to get a levena, a brick, and create out of it something that seems like a diorama of Yerushalayim, complete with a siege. Next, he is to alternately lie in each of his sides while looking at this brick of Jerusalem. And finally, he's instructed to make and eat bread that seems like the original Ezekiel bread. These are certainly unusual requests, but if we look at them more carefully, we may be able to discern something of their symbolic import. As we delve into the Pesukim, let's keep an ear out for echoes of earlier texts in Torah, as well as words that repeat themselves. Let's get started. Something that will help us keep a mental outline of these events is paying attention to an interesting language cue. Each of these actions is introduced with the word vata and you. In the first vata section, Yechezkel is told, you are to create a replica of an ear, a city, the city of Yerushalayim, using a levena, a brick, v'natata alea matzor. Etch into the brick an image of Yerushalayim under matzor, under siege. And for full effect, Yechezkel is to add props. God says, add a dayak, a watchtower built for the purpose of capturing the city, a silila, a mountain of dirt that is poured in war in order to create a siege ramp to enable the capture of the city, and include machanot, armies, complete with karim, army officers. In the next vata section, Yechezkel is asked to add something to this little diorama of the city of Yerushalayim. Vata kach lecha machavat barzel, v'sim aleha kir barzel. He is to take a metal pan and use it to create a replica of a metal wall, an impenetrable wall. He is to place it between himself and this brick image of the city of Yerushalayim, which he has created. But so as David explains that the metal wall signifies a choma, a wall that surrounds a city. Here, the wall separates the city's inhabitants from the enemy that is laying siege to the city. Yechezkel is now instructed to turn his face toward the city. Vachinota panecha eleha. And the next thing he's asked to do seems counterintuitive for a Navi whose role was just defined as its sofeh. It's kind of scary to think about, but here Yechezkel is actually being asked to represent the enemy in this demo replica of the city. In the last parak, when we talked about Yechezkel's role redefined as Etzofeh, we explained that being Etzofeh places Yechezkel into the role of a scout, someone who is on the side of the people, warning them, almost as their cheerleader. Yet here, Yechezkel is told to do something that seems to read as anything but Etzofeh. Vitzarta leha. Literally, you should lay siege upon her, upon the city. Act out being the enemy who assaults the city. How do these two roles jive? How can Yechezkel serve as a Navi who sides with the people and at the same time impersonate the enemy? Perhaps God is telling him something along these lines. As Etzofeh, you're meant to warn the people. But the method in which you will warn the people is no longer through speech. Instead, you will be symbolically acting out the impending destruction. This way, you will help the people understand what it will be like to have the city under siege with an enemy coming to attack. Warn them about me and what I will do. As we saw God say in the last paragraph, he's hard to tell many. Warn them, God is saying, by showing them dramatically what it will be like when Jerusalem is under siege. Sounds like this is the intent of the pasuk, which concludes the section, which tells us this action is to serve as an ot, a sign to Bnei Yisrael. Oti lebeit Yisrael. The next section, starting in pasuk Dalet, is again prefaced by the word v'ata. Yechezkel is told, v'ata shchav al tircha ha-smoli, you should lay on your left side. But, even more strangely, v'samta et avon beit Yisrael alav. Literally, place the sins of the people on your side. Are you picturing it? Yechezkel laying there with the sins of the people piled on his side. Mispar hayamim asher tishkav alav tisa davonam. The whole time you're laying on your side, you will carry tisa, the burden of the people's sin upon you. That word tisa connotes the carrying of a burden. Like when Moshe tells Hashem, Echa esa levadi tochachem ma'asem v'rechem. How can I bear the burden of the people? Moshe says, kind of like the sins are so heavy and difficult to bear. The image that emerges here is something like a very heavy dumbbell weight. As heavy as the sins of the people being placed on Yechezkel's left side as he lays on it, the sins are an almost crushing weight. Yechezkel here is overloaded, carrying the sins of the people, just like Yerushalayim is burdened, about to be crushed by the sins of the people. Here, instead of impersonating the enemy, Yechezkel is now impersonating the city. The city is about to crumble under the weight of sin. How long is Yechezkel to lay this way? As long as these sins have been piling up. Lay there, Hashem says, one day for every year of the sins of the house of Israel. And then, v'chilita, when you've finished these 390 days, turn over to your right side where you are to carry or bear the weight of the sins of Beit Yehudah, who are currently in the city of Yerushalayim, for an additional 40 days. Rashi quotes Seder Olam, who calculates that the years account for the sins of the people from the time of Yoshua until this point. Rashi also explains that the right and left sides are not just random elements. They reflect the geography. Geographically, Yerushalayim is pretty much at the border of the northern and southern kingdoms. So imagine yourself lying on your left side, with your head at Jerusalem and your feet facing the Jordan River to the east. If you're on your left side, then you would be facing north toward the northern kingdom. The 390 days represent the 390 years of sin of that kingdom. If you turn and go on your right side, you're now facing south toward the kingdom of Yehuda. Yehuda is to survive for another 40 years after the exile of the 10 tribes. The 40 days, Rashi says, correspond to the 40 additional years of sin. In Pasuk Zion, we learn that as Yechezkel lays on his side, he is to still make use of that brick replica he had created. He is to face that brick, which represents the siege of Yerushalayim, kind of like he is being told, keep that image of the siege of Yerushalayim fixed before you. And just to make sure he doesn't even move from side to side, Yechezkel is told, V'natati alecha avotim. I will tie you down using ropes, God says. Definitely not an easy position to lie in for any length of time, let alone 390 plus another 40 days. In the words of the pasuk, the length of time when he is to lay alternately on his sides is described as yemei matzurecha, the days of your matzor, your siege. Instead of Yerushalayim being described as under siege, as we saw earlier, now it is Yechezkel himself who is described as under siege. How are we to understand this? And the pasuk says, Yechezkel, stay on your side until your time of siege is completed. In what sense is Yechezkel under siege? He is tied down with rope, that's true. But perhaps what we are learning here is that what's really weighing him down is carrying the sins of the people. That is what feels like a siege to him. The enemy is laying siege to the city of Yerushalayim, but what is really destroying the city, God is telling Yechezkel, is the crushing weight of the sins of the people. Interestingly, when an enemy lays siege to a city, they destroy the city walls by applying crushing force. Here, God says, the true crushing force that will break the city walls are the sins of the people. It's kind of like while watching this image of the brick representing the matzor, Yechezkel is to personally experience what that matzor is like. He is warning the people about the matzor through his actions. He himself is to feel that masa, the crushing weight of the sins of the people, sins that have accumulated over the course of 430 years. To go back to that word masa again, The term nosepa ol imchavero comes to mind, sharing the burden of another by experiencing their pain with them. Here it seems Yechezkel will best be able to warn the people of the impending siege by personally experiencing the pain of the Metzor as well. Perhaps another layer of meaning here is for Yechezkel to also experience what it feels like for God to be nose, to carry the crushing weight of the sins of the people for so many years. It's one thing to sit in an uncomfortable middle seat on the plane for a short trip, but just imagine sitting in that seat for 390 days, let alone 430. It would become nearly unbearable. Yerushalayim in general, and the Mikdash specifically, is a domicile for Hashem, a place where Hashem's Shechina resides along with the people. But with the people committing a host of sins, from idolatry to sacrificing their children to false gods, God has to be a resident in Yerushalayim during all that time and in close quarters with such abominations. It was as if the Shechina itself was experiencing a matzor. And here, God is asking Yechezkel to feel this discomfort viscerally. It might be that technically, it is God who becomes the enemy or deploys the enemy, but he is just carrying out what has already been done by the people, by the weight of their sins. Yechezkel is to experience and share in the lot of the people under siege. And at the same time, he is to experience what this burden of sins must feel like to God, so to say. Pretty powerful. Let's now turn to the final Vatas action in this parak. This time, starting in Pasuk 10, Yechezkel is to make the original Ezekiel bread. When we think Ezekiel bread, we think of a bread of choice, a super healthy, multi-grain bread. Believe it or not, the very verse we are studying, 4:9, is quoted in the Ezekiel bread packaging, in what seems like an attempt to show us that this is a very desirable bread, a bread that was even prepared by the biblical figure Ezekiel himself. Check it out next time you're in the grocery store. In reality, though, this advertising is a bit of a misnomer. At the time of Yechezkel, this bread was actually made of what was considered a second-rate mix of gathered ingredients, such as barley and other grains, at a time when the usual bread-making ingredients were unattainable because the city was cut off under siege and there wasn't access to the wheat fields and other more desirable ingredients. Yechezkel is now told to prepare and eat only Ezekiel bread during this time period when he lays on his side. This bread of siege, Yechezkel will only eat in small quantities. He will eat only an amount that weighs 20 shekel daily, simulating the matzor experience when not only are certain ingredients depleted, but there's very little quantity to go around. Water will also be rationed daily, just like in times of siege, only 1/6 of a hin measurement daily. Yechezkel is then told how this food of matzor will be prepared. The fire, the fuel used to prepare the food of matzor, will be prepared by drawing out human excrement. Yechezkel is told that this is how the Jews will experience their food in the times of the siege. Yechezkel recoils at the thought of this. Vayomer aha Hashem Elokim, hine nafshin lo metuma'a, v'nevelah trefa lo achalti menurai ba'anata. He says, I haven't desecrated my soul. I've never eaten disgusting things like nevelot or trefot. Remember, Yechezkel is a Navi here. I never had ate meat with impure thoughts. How does God respond to Yechezkel's reluctance this time? We've seen it both ways. God has insisted that Yechezkel do it his way when it came to eating the Megillah. Yet at the same time, God adjusted to Yechezkel, allowing him leeway in terms of how he warns the rebellious nation. But this time, God once again shows flexibility. Without missing a beat, God immediately allows Yechezkel to use animal dung as fuel instead. Doesn't necessarily sound that much better to us, though, does it? The whole thing sounds very foreign and extreme to us, as most of us presumably have not lived through a siege. One can only understand and relate to what a masseur is like through a visceral experience, which is what Yechezkel was being asked to do here. Personally, the closest I've come to understanding matzor is listening to the stories of my father used to tell us. My father, Alev HaShalom, grew up as an 8-year-old child in another matzor that also took place in Yerushalayim. The year was 1948, many thousands of years after the matzor described in Sefer Yechezkel. My father used to tell us that the same water that he was personally responsible for lugging home from the rationing center was used for multiple purposes. I don't remember the exact details, but I do remember him describing the efficient order they put into place for reusing the same water again and again for all of their needs, from drinking to cooking to cleaning to bathing. One particular story that we always used to ask him to retell was the story of his mother mistakenly putting precious ration salt into a cake recipe instead of sugar. Food couldn't be wasted, my father would explain. And starvation was around the corner if she didn't use your rations carefully. They couldn't afford to toss the cake. The whole family ate it, forcing it down their throats. But sir has to be experienced, or at least described by someone who went through it, in order to understand it. That is what God is asking Yecheskel to do in our parag. Experience it. Demonstrate it. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander.